So we're going to get started with the sugya now. And as I said before, we're going to continue the sugya over the next day or two as well. So the boys who are here, we will continue here in Yeshiva beyond today. For the parents who I have the chus to spend some time with this morning, so this will enable you to have, you have no choice. Your boys will have no choice but to fill you in, go beyond today and where the sugya goes. I'm not sure if that will happen before Rosh Hashanah preparations are done or not, but I want now to sort of begin to lay out where the sugya is going to take us, and then we're going to hopefully see already some fascinating vistas today and continue to develop from there beyond today. So you saw a shock of attire, and let's begin with that. Let's take a look inside together at the brisa that appears at the bottom of this again is in the we're zooming in on part of a larger shot of Natalia and presenting on Beis Amud Aleph three different possible explanations, three possible rationales for what will be wrong with a sukkah that's more than 20 amos tall. The Gemara begins trying to sort them out. And can we find indications, the words of the Tanaim, that make it clear which one is the correct explanation? But for our purposes, we're not focused on that machlokas. For our purposes, we're just going to look at this brisa itself. Meisved sukkah shehi gevoha l'mal mi asermal m'psula reviewed amachshe. That appears in our Mishnah as well. The sukkah is more than 20 amos tall. Machlokas ha'tanarim, Yehuda felt that it was fine, and the other tanarim said beyond 20 amos is no good. Yehuda says arabam v'chamishna. Even if it's 40-50 amos high, totally fine. Harav Yehuda. Yehuda says, and apparently Yehuda felt the need to prove himself, to prove his position to the other Tanam. So he says, I have historical proof. I have precedent. We know that the earlier Tanam took a stand in this issue. And they assumed, like I did. So maybe this generation is the machlokas. They said, if you back up a couple generations to the days of going back a number of generations, going, taking us back into the period before the destruction of the second Beis HaMikdash, to the period of Queen Helen. Masa behilin yamalka beluin. Shais sukasa gevol me'asram. Behilin yamalka herself, time doesn't allow us to expand, and she was a very, very fascinating figure. She was a great tzaddikus, as our Gemara clearly assumes. There are other indications, other meseftas as well. She was queen, a Jewish queen, but not of Eretz Yisrael. Her son, Munbaz, was a king of a country that was probably somewhere near Caucasia. For those who are familiar with the story of the Khuzri, the story that the Khuzri tells of a 7th, 8th century Jewish kingdom out in Central Asia. So this is sort of like a precursor to that. It sounds like during the period of the second Beis HaMikdash, because the Mishnayos elsewhere talk about donations that Queen Helen, Helen Yamalka, made to the Beis HaMikdash. That she was a righteous woman, tzaddikus, and her son was a tzaddik. Mishnah actually says in Nazir that very fascinating story. Her son went out to a very significant military encounter, and she was very worried what the outcome would be. And she promises to become a Nazira. And that's close, that her son should be survive and be successful. And the minimum period of a Nazira is 30 days. She volunteered 7 years. 7 years. And the Mishnayos, this is beyond the scope of our conversation now, Mishnayos say that she had to restart her Naziris twice, and she was totally wet with it. She had to restart at the end of the 7 years, and then at the end of the next set of 7 years, and finally after 21 years, she succeeded in completing her Naziris, bringing Karbanos, and ended a 21-year Naziris. She was a remarkable, remarkable woman. So this Hilnia, another story of Hilnia Malka. Yehuda says, again, this is going back a century or two. When she lived in Lud, Sukasa, she had come to Eretz Israel, and she had a sukkah, and her sukkah was a regal sukkah, Gevoha me Esther Mama, way more than 20 amos tall. All the Rabbanim came to visit her in the sukkah. No one said anything. The obvious assumption is, and the Chachamim were courageous and honest, and if there was something wrong, they would have said something. They would have no problem speaking truth to power, but they didn't say anything because there's nothing to say. They didn't. Uh, they, they didn't comment on her sukkah because it was indeed kosher. Amar lo, the Chachamim respond to Yehuda, Misham Raya. What type of proof is that? Isha Haisa Uftura Min HaSukkah. She's a woman. She's not Chayavis in Sukkah. If she wants to volunteer the mitzvah of Sukkah, she certainly can, but she's not obligated. Maybe that's why the Chacham didn't say anything. She's not obligated in Sukkah anyhow. Maybe they didn't eat much in her Sukkah. So Yehuda responds that's not why they didn't say anything. Amar lehem below Shiva ban banim havula. But she had seven sons. They were Chayav in Sukkah. The Ode called Ma'asel Asel Pi'achad. Number one, she had boys in her family. Number two, she always followed the Rabbanim instruction. The Gemara wants to know a footnote. Lamali Lamisti, the old Kaman said, also did come. What's with that second point? He told me that the boys in the family, so she had sons, she needed to have a kosher sukkah, she was required to have a kosher sukkah for her son. What's with that added line? The Gemara explained that you have to have a sense of historical consciousness to understand the context in which they were operating. The Chitom room, but in Kitanim Hayu, whereas Ayo tell me, yeah, she had sons, it's true there were boys in the family, but they were under Bar Mitzvah. Under Bar Mitzvah, Kitanim Peturim in HaSukkah, but they're not Chayav in Sukkah. That's why the first point that the Bryce is making, there were seven sons, Shiva Havu, there were seven boys, and she had two boys, maybe they were all of them were not Chayav in Sukkah. But if there were seven, there must have been at least one or two that were over the age of chinuch. Perhaps they were all under bar mitzvah, but over the age of chinuch. And the chiten, and that's what you saw in the Mishnah in later in the Sefer Zohar. That Mishnah in Daf Nun Beis, amplified by the Braisa that appeared later in the Gemara in Daf Nun Beis, that there's a notion of a chiyuv of ketan b'mitzvahs, and specifically their ages. And each mitzvah had its age at which chinuch kicks in. And saying, you're right, maybe they were all under bar mitzvah, but it's hard to imagine they were all so small that chinuch didn't apply. So that explains the first leg where Yehuda says that she had seven sons, not only sons, but seven sons. So there must have been someone who was at least Chayim mitam chinuch. But then, so what's that second piece? And she was very religious. She only followed the rabbis. And if you take a conscience of the inu mitrabanu in the chayim, well, but that's all in the intrabanu. Over by mitzvah is a chiyuv deraisa pasuk in chumash. Under by mitzvah is only in intrabanu. The e mitrabanu laash mashkecha. And again, being sensitive to the context, as we know from sources throughout Shas, as well as beyond. That one of the major tensions over the course of the Vayesheni period was the tension between those Jews who faithful to the Masorah of Torah Shebaal Peh and those Jews that Tzedukim by Susim and groups of that sort who rejected the Torah Shebaal Peh. They followed Chumash more or less with their own. You can't keep Chumash without some sort of interpretation. So they made up. They it's not that they didn't believe in Torah Shebaal Peh. They substituted their own invented Torah Shebaal Peh for the traditional Masorah of Torah Shebaal Peh in Sinai. But where Yehuda is saying is, you might think, maybe you think the Hilni Malka was one of those, that she was a member of the camp of the Tzedukin by Tusim, and she didn't care much about the Dinei Rabbanan. So if the kids were under bar mitzvah, you know, she'd let them do as they will. No. Kol ma'aselo asa al pi chachamim. She was sensitive to Rabbanan, and she would have been very sensitive to instructions and guidance that the Rabbanim would have offered her. So that's why that's what Yehuda is saying. You see that what? What's the Gemara's point?
Okay.
Right. Must be this is a kosher sukkah. Must be this is a kosher sukkah because the Rabbanim would have commented. They would have commented because what happened to Chinuch? And the Ritva is an important comment here. The show of hands, just to get a sense of where people got to. How many got to the Ritva? I assume few, if any. Okay. Fantastic. I want to take a step back, though, for a moment, and we'll circle back before we close. We're going to close at 12:20. And before we close, we'll circle back to Ritva. But I want to step out for a moment, zoom out to see a larger issue of Chinuch, and we'll see how it plays back, at least begin to see, how it plays back into our subject. mentioned before, you saw the Mishnah and Daf Mem Beis and Sukkah, one of the sources in Mishnayos. And there is, as our Gemara tells us here, Midrabanan, a mitzvah Midrabanan of chinuch katan b'mitzvahs. There's a comment that Rav Shechter is fond of quoting from the Chafetz Chaim. Chafetz Chaim's yahrzeit was just 2 days ago. Certainly a particularly appropriate time to mention ideas of Chafetz Chaim. Chafetz Chaim was a man who had, to a remarkable degree, had his finger on the pulse. So we picture the Chafetz Chaim as being very otherworldly. But if you a survey of his svarim, he wrote many. He wrote, I think, upwards of 70, 80 published svarim and pamphlets. And one of the things that stands out, one after another, is the extent to which he was very, very attuned to what were the issues in the community. What were the issues in the community in Radin, and throughout Eastern Europe, Jews in America, he really had his finger on the pulse. And one of the issues that he speaks about, more than one of his published works, is he looks around and he sees, and we know this was very prevalent in America, but it wasn't just an American issue, Jews who were personally observant, but were not succeeding, and perhaps weren't even investing in passing on to their children. I mean, that was unfortunately too common in America. The immigrant parents kept Shabbos and kept very connected to the mitzvahs, and did not always succeed in passing on to their children. And he wrote on that issue significantly. And one of the points he makes is that, you know, sometimes people think, my mitzvah is daraisa, chinuch is just drabana. Whether my kid keeps this or not, that's in the drabanim. But for me, my mitzvah is daraisa, so I'll triage it that way. And the Chafetz Chaim points out, you've got to be careful with definitions here. It says, Avraham Kadosh Baruch Hu in Parshas Vayera talks about why he's so proud of Avraham Avinu, and why he feels Avraham's love for him so much. And the Pasuk says, Ki yidat v'ma she'etzav ez banu ez beis ha'achrav. I know that Avraham Avinu loves me because I see that he's so invested in doing what he can. Results are beyond our control. Results are up to Kadosh Baruch Hu. He invests the effort in passing it on to the next generation. It says that's chinuch daraisa. That's the pasuk of the chumash. What we deal with is the notion of doing whatever we can to the extent you partner with Kadosh Baruch Hu. Results are up to Kadosh Baruch Hu, but efforts are in our hands. We do what we can to attempt to set kids up for spiritual success going forward. That's a mitzvah daraisa. That's absolutely an overarching value in our Torah. What we're looking at right now, the mitzvah drabanan, is the here and now. Is my son is 10 years old, I need to see with it, not to do what I can so that he'll be inspired when he's 14 and 18 and hopefully 58 to sit in sukkah. That's a mitzvah daraisa. But the formal din drabanan is that when he's 10, he needs to sit in sukkah now. That, after all, is what our Gemara is talking about. Not that she's having conversations with her sons about the mitzvah sukkah and the meaningfulness of mitzvah sukkah, the meaningfulness of the Torah life, doing what we can to hopefully inspire, but insisting right now that at age 10 you're going to sit in sukkah now before bar mitzvah. That formal mitzvah, that chinuch katan b'mitzvahs presently, that's a mitzvah b'drabanan. As our Gemara comments in Daf Beis and Beis, that's a drabanan. Hilani Hamalka cared about the drabanans, and that's a mitzvah drabanan, which already appears in multiple mishnayos. You saw two out of three. There are at least three mishnayos. There's a Mishnah Chagig, which we did not see, at least not today. Mishnah Sukkah, you saw it on the Sefta. What that Mishnah adds is not only is the mitzvah of chinuch, but specifically, what does the Mishnah of Sukkah add to the conversation about chinuch? Well, when, right? When you're ready. There's an age for chinuch, which is again part of the conversation argument also. And specifically, the age for chinuch is specific to the mitzvah. As the Brisa goes on to say, once a child is ready to do the mitzvah fully, whether it's katan yadeh naneya, a boy who's old enough not just to pick up a lulav, but to shake it, or as Brisa goes on to say, child's old enough to learn, child's old enough to wear a talis, and so on and so forth. Each mitzvah has its own gil chinuch, its own age for when chinuch is appropriate. Another place where chinuch appears in Mishnayos is which masechta? Left half of the room? My left? Where else, which other masechta has a Mishnah with the mitzvah of chinuch? Yuma, fantastic, right? What does the Mishnah say in Yuma? Right, fasting also, you start not too early, not too late. Sometimes some kids want to, you know, They think they'll be like the big siblings and they'll start fasting when they're 6 years old. Sorry, that's too early. Some kids will be glad to keep eating. Sorry, that's too late. Right? Has to be at the right age. The Gemara goes on to explain in the Mishnah that we do it in steps. That for a year or two before bar mitzvah, depending on how healthy the kids are. My father was fond of saying that in America we're over healthy. When the Gemara said healthy, it meant as opposed to being a malnourished. So Baruch Hashem, that is not a problem. That is quite as common as America as it was for our great-grandparents. Usually the health consideration is more in the other direction. The Mishnah says, depending on the health and the strength and robustness of the child, you start fasting a full Yom Kippur a year or two before Bar Bas Mitzvah, and you start part of the day a year or two before that. And it's in that context that some of you may have seen, the Tosfos Yeshanim raises a question, a surprising question. Points to a surprising Gemara. They go to the top of Kuf Yud Dalet in Yevamos. It's a seven-word sentence. We want to talk about the how much latitude we give children to violate halacha. When do you step in, when do you not step in? Once again, it's a seven, eight word phrase. What was that phrase? Talmud Daf Kuf Yud Dalet. What was that phrase? How was it spoken up yet? Fantastic. Custom oil from the males. That's the case. You see a child who's eating the velus, he's eating boar's head. He's eating Purdue chicken. Doesn't sound particularly kosher, and indeed it's not. It says the Gemara, Ein Bezin, Metsuvin Lamfrisha. Obviously excerpting one line from a larger sugya, but that's a key line, and a line that Rishon seemed to be comfortable embracing as a maskana. The child is eating the veils under bar mitzvah, ain't beis mitzvah l'afisho. Beis is not obligated, not mitzvah, to stop it, to step in and stop it. Kids eating the pork rinds, got a bag of utz pork rinds, he's having a good time. Chazer treif, beis and stands there with folded arms, they do nothing. How's that sit with it, yeah?
That's not what it said.
I agree. Okay, fair enough. But Beis Din has the right. Beis Din has the right to stand there with folded arms.
No.
Yeah.
And the Beis Din doesn't mean that they can't. They don't have a power to command them to be in the right. You can interpret this very minimally. Say, we're talking about Beis Din obligation. Well, obligation of Beis Din doesn't mean it's not the right thing to do.
We might encourage, you're saying. But certainly we have the right to stand by and be passive. You're trying to draw which distinction? You're saying I'm not obligated to step in by auto.
Yes.
Certainly possible. If we had more time, maybe we should sit down afterwards and take a look at the we're excerpting one little line, but from the sugya, it sounds like we would sometimes be comfortable letting this go on. So there's a Torah, but you're right. But I think also part of what you're speaking to is at the first level in which this Gemara troubles us, is just like emotively. Really? It's hard to imagine that scene. Really? There are a bunch of all sitting around, and a kid walks by with a big yarmulke and a bag of pork rinds. A kid walks by with a big yarmulke and a cheeseburger from Burger King, and all the rabbanim are sitting around. Right? The rub of the shul is sitting there. And one of the boys from the shul sort of walks by casually with Burger King, and the rabbi says, oh, okay, he's 10 years old. I won't say anything. It strikes us, we're like, ah, how could that be? Number one, just like, oh, how you talking? Number two, even formally, we put our heart aside, put our emotional response aside, which we generally should not. Emotional response is the healthy one. In addition to the emotional response of, how could this be? What else troubles you about this Gemara?
Yeah,
Mishnayos. Two Mishnayos plus a third one you haven't even seen. A Gemara in Sukkot that days, and elsewhere. Chet Ketan B'Mitzvahs. He insists he has to sit in the Sukkah, and he has to fast Yom Kippur, and he's going to go on the Yellow Rego, and he's going to wear tzitzis, and really, but he can eat virgin. And what's wrong with this? I thought it. As a matter of fact, take a look, and it's important that we see the language. V'tos Yisham. This booklet is organized, as you saw, on Seder Hashas. Siyar Pei Beis Haman Alef and Yuma. The Tos Yisham says a question which Tosus and the Sefer Shabbos raises as well. Im Toma, Hadarim B'chol Duchta, that which you say everywhere. It's interesting that Tosus and Yisham refers to this everywhere. Not that common a phrase in Shabbos, but Tosus Yisham is clearly setting this up as a dispositive one. This is accepted. This is central. This is accepted that cut and off the nails ain't based on the Sufim Afrisha. It's almost this, Ahashta Chanuchim Echanchinam, Afrushim Eisurim Epaim. I don't understand. You gotta be Mechanaf the Kinder Mitzvahs? All the more so you have to stop from doing Avera. I mean, if you have to insist he shakes the Lulav, Post Shalom sounds like he's saying, well, which one is more obvious? You have to insist he shakes a little bit, you have to insist he puts away the virgin. Tosu Sisham says, which is worse, not shaking a little bit, eating virgin? Virgin. Shaky. Yeah. That's a great question. Why are we assuming that, let's say, that avoiding Yisurim is even more obvious than doing this? You know what I'm saying? Any response to that? Okay, so number one, Onesh is more common. So one issue is the Onesh is more common. And there are contexts, actually, in Masechet Yuma, another blot or two, where the Gemara, so let's say, if you're trying to triage Yisurim in a situation where Pikuach Nefesh requires that I violate some Isra or another. I need to eat food, only food at hand is trade. I need to eat someone, and a patient has to have food to save his life. We can't wait until kosher food arrives. So the Gemara says you have to triage and take that which is least chamur, to try to minimize that very as much as possible. And the Gemara Brisa says, Daf Pei Gimel, that we can, the metric for determining which is the lesser avera is which has the lesser punishment. So from that perspective, if the nevelus is a malchus and the mitzvah is not malchus, so but you're right. On the other hand, I say the chalos is it. What did we say? Oh, but that goes back to something we talked about in Shir last week, right? That the you're saying not only is the Avera Mochamer from a point of view of Onesh, but also eating the Beis I violate actively. Not seeing, not shaking Lulav is something I violate passively. Now, the fasting Yom Kippur is sort of a funny situation, because I am violent actively. Right, so that sounds like that's what's driving. We'd have to come back to Da'aseh Da'avos and say, yeah. Sorry? Oh, that's a great point. The answer that Tosu Sham does not give, we haven't seen any answers yet, but they give two, a French answer and a German answer, the Re and the Lesser Emits. The third answer is the one that doesn't appear here, but does appear, what you said, in Masech HaShabbos. Tosu Masech HaShabbos gives an answer, which is called Halacha and Shulchan Aruch. Actually, you have to know where to find it. It's Doug is stuck away near the end of Halacha HaShabbos. Tosfos Shabbos says maybe the Gemara in Yevamos is only talking about Kodim Shegiel Echina. Maybe the Gemara in Yevamos is talking about the four-year-old. You see a four-year-old eating a cheeseburger. You can't give him the cheeseburger. You see a four-year-old eating a cheeseburger. He doesn't even appreciate what kashrus is. So then you don't have to stop him. Right? So that's very good. That is relevant. That is acceptance as part of the Maspil Halacha. Tosfos Shanim, though, quotes two other Balyatosos, major Balyatosos, neither of whom gives an answer. But you're right, that is the answer to Tosfos Shanim. Tosfos Shanim, I want to have the next 4 minutes or so that we have, begin to lay out at least a structure of where this is going. And hopefully see a glimmering of how this takes us to several sukkahs, one of which is back to home base, sukkah, daf, base, and base. Tosfos Shanim lays out two tirutzim. One of them is really surprising. I want to jump to the second one first, only because a little bit less surprising. On the second wide line, Rebbe Omer, my Rebbe, and I believe that my Rebbe here is, I believe this Tosfos Shanim is written by a Talmud of the Re. This is probably the Re, The Rebbe was a great grandson of Rashi, a nephew of Rabbi Yotam, and Rabbi Yotam's greatest French Talmud. And he's really the Rebbe in many ways is the father of the French Balei Tosfos. So Rabbi Omer, the Rebbe's answer is Chinuch lo shayach el bi'av, al ba'adam achar lo shayach bechinuch. Chinuch is a mitzvah on the father, or perhaps on the parents, but not anyone else. So that's why the Rebbe says that the key word here is Eizdin. Ein Beizdin Mitzvah L'Arfisho. The Rebbe says, those Mishnayos, those are all about the father, or maybe more broadly, the parents. That's a discussion as Toshan continues. So he says, yeah, if the father saw the kid, of course he got to step in. Now, as you, Dr. Parnon pointed out, Beizdin certainly has the right, and it sounds like a good idea, but strictly speaking, no obligation to step in. To expand on this more would require, which we will take a look at tomorrow, a sugya in Brachas, a fascinating, strange story of the murderous Yanai HaMelech, who massacred all the rabbis, even though the chief rabbi was his brother-in-law, Shimon ben Shetach. The Gemara talks about their reuniting over eggshells. It's a remarkable story, and I encourage parents to ask your sons about it. We'll take a look at that tomorrow. We're going to put aside the Rebbe for a moment, or for a day, to go back from the Rebbe to Reb Elazar Mimitz. Let's take a step back. I'm glad to take questions, but we're almost done. Let's take questions afterwards. You don't need to make a bus. Omer Rabbi Rabbi Eliezer Mimitz, Rabbi at the end of the narrow one. Chinuch lo shayach el shiyasa mitzvah. Chinuch is only for mitzvahs. Well, afrusha meisura. Chinuch is only for mitzvahs, but t'imafrish from an iser, no. Chinuch is only mitzvahs. Ah, so the difference is katan for a lesser mitz, it's katan ochel nevelos. Yeah, the kids eat treif. There's no chinuch on not eating treif. Not eating treif, that starts in your bar mitzvah. Well, that starts in your bar mitzvah. But until the bar mitzvah, we only insist you have to sit in sukkah and shake a lulav. He goes on to say, fasting Yom Kippur is not just an iser, it's actually a mitzvah, which the fellows who were here were like Ramban last week, by that notion of a passive kiyum mitzvah. There's actually a kiyum of keeping Yom Kippur, but not nevelos. Now the question is, we just shifted assumptions smoothly. The kasha was, and this goes back to a zivrit, the kasha was, kavach omer, if there's chinuch ha-mitzvahs, there's certainly a chinuch ha-nevelos. And the teretz is, no. Well, may kar my kasavar, I have to hold the question just a moment. Now, I share this is the beginning of an idea, a kernel of an idea. We'll have a chance to explain it more in Shem tomorrow. Rav Shechter quotes in a footnote of Nikkei Hatzon, fascinating Maharal. Maharal says, if I'm volunteering a mitzvah, so I could volunteer if I'm not mechuyeves to sit in sukkah, if I'm not mechuyeves to shake lulav, I could still volunteer. I wasn't obligated to do it. If I choose not to shake lulav, if I'm not obligated, no cross, no fault. But if I choose to volunteer lulav, so I got a mitzvah, I performed. I seized something, I accomplished something. It was a key on mitzvah. Maral says, but you can't volunteer to avoid an aveira. If it's asr, it's asr. And I need to avoid it because I don't avoid it. I just got myself into spiritual poison. But if I'm not bound by that aveira, what does it mean to volunteer to avoid aveira? There's no key on anyhow. Maral suggests, he isn't talking in a different context, he develops the idea that the others perform on Torah kept mitzvahs, but didn't avoid aveiros for that reason. So it's meaningful to volunteer a mitzvah that you're not mechuyev to keep, but it's meaningless to volunteer to avoid something that isn't usher for me. The Rav Shechter suggests that may be the pshat in this position of the Re'aim as well. That what the Re'aim is saying is, you're right, in terms of global halachic thinking, aveiros are usually worse and more chomer than mitzvahs. However, here what we're asking the child to do is to volunteer something meaningful. And the Re'aim apparently is assuming, and that's an assumption that we'll have to unpack some more, that the Re'aim is assuming that chinuch is only about doing things that actually matter. They're actually meaningful. He says, if the kid's not chayav in the Torah, to avoid the cheeseburger, so what does it mean that we're going to sell them, but you should avoid it anyways? But there's no kiyum. Masha Eino King, to tell you, you ought to volunteer to keep a mitzvah, even though you're not mechuyev to the Torah, but once you volunteer, that's meaningful. And although we are not mako, like Iran, we do definitely insist on chinuch katan and mitzvahs both for mitzvahs and yisurim, it does bring us back home, the following says. Mitzvah points out in our Gemara where we began. Gemara is proving a point about Hilchos Sukkah from Queen Helen. From the way Queen Helen insisted that her children keep mitzvahs. Says it's written, what do you see? You see that it's not enough to have the kids practice something that loosely corresponds to mitzvahs. They need to do it right. The assumption is that just for the 10-year-old, it can't just be a sukkah experience. It needs to be a really, truly kosher sukkah. Rich actually has very strong language here. He says, I see many people make a mistake about that. That's why I insisted. It has to be a real kiyum. Why? Those two points seem to be coherent with each other. In other words, chinuch is not just about practice for the ritzvah and for the Iranian. It's not just about practicing mitzvahs. When you get older, you'll go through the motions. We want that, maybe the motivation, but Chazal insists, what the mitzvah of Chazal created was that children actually do mitzvahs properly. The Ritva says, Lahachamir, it has to be with all the specifications, even something the boy or girl wouldn't pick up on his children. And the Iranian even takes that to an extreme, this is even Lahakil, perhaps if it's only that which is meaningful, perhaps it's only mitzvahs and not Yisur. I want to thank you so much for coming. We're coming on Shabbat night, your Sunday. Once again, my phone number is on the board. I look forward to being in touch. And I look forward to sharing your nachas throughout the year and beyond.
Was it the Shulchan Aruch that said that the reason for the problem with Yevamos is that